Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com.
I was going in for some meetings, and one of the meetings was like voiceover, and the casting agent was like, okay, well, now do something other than Southern. I was like, I got nothing for you. And she's like, well, do a grandmother. So I did it. She goes, okay, but can she not be Southern? I'm like, lady, no. I got all different versions of Southern, but this is what I got.
Hey, y'all, I'm Tommy Tomlinson, and from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Southbound. There once was a young woman named Emily Feimster from a small town in North Carolina. She was an athlete in high school and college, presented as a debutante, graduated summa cum laude, had the whole world in front of her. But she didn't know what she wanted to be. And more than that, she didn't know who she really was. She didn't learn all that until she moved to Los Angeles, started a career in show business, and started going by her middle name, Fortune. Now, Fortune Feimster sells out comedy shows around the country. Her latest special, Sweet and Salty, is available on Netflix. She's also an actress, with roles including the spot on the reboot of The L Word, the Showtime series depicting the lives of gay women. Feels like a good fit, because a TV movie about a gay woman changed Fortune Feimster's life. Want to know the rest of the story? Here's our conversation. Fortune Feimster, I know enough about comedy to know that not every story that's told on stage is 100% accurate and true. Mm-hmm. But I have to ask, so did you really realize you were gay by watching a Lifetime movie?
I really did.
Well, so tell that story.
Yeah. Well, I'll say first, all of my stand-up special is true.
Really?
And I just take some creative license here and there. So there are things that I sort of, add to give it a little flavor, but everything's based on a very true story. That particular story was me realizing that I was gay.
And in a fairly advanced place in your life, right?
Yeah, 25 years old, which now seems pretty crazy. But I have to, that's what I was trying to kind of explain in my special, is that it was a different time. And I am, from North Carolina. I'm from this small town called Belmont that's about 10,000 people. And I just did not grow up with examples of out gay people. I didn't have any gay friends. I mean, now I have friends from Belmont who are gay, but they weren't out either. And, the internet didn't really become a part of people's lives until I was going to college, and there weren't gay shows on the air. And so I just really legitimately did not know that I was gay. And it seems so naive now, but that's just kind of the world that we were living in at that point. And so once I moved to Los Angeles, I started seeing gay people, and I started meeting gay people, and nobody like thought twice about it. It was like, yeah, they're gay. But, oh, well, I mean, like, great. Good for them. Life was normal. And, for someone from the South, that just sort of blew my mind. Like, you're like, oh, they're just normal people living their life. There's nothing weird about it or bad about it. And so that started to sort of like, I think shift something in my mind. And then I started seeing things like The L Word. And so I started seeing representation out there. And then I was 25. And at this point, this feeling, was sort of bubbling up. And I watched this movie, a Lifetime movie called The Truth About Jane.
I went and looked up clips of this movie. They put poor Jane through the ringer.
They sure did. She went through a real journey. Her mom was played by Stockard Channing.
Right.
Who we know from Grease. And yeah, I watched this journey of this young girl, realized she was gay, and it was hard at first, and her teacher helped her, and then in the end, her mom came around and loved her no matter what. But, you know, I just sort of watched her coming out process, and I was all by myself, and I legitimately went, at the end of the movie, I go, oh, my God, I'm gay. And I said it out loud, and it really was the first time that I'd ever admitted to myself that I was gay. And so I was like, I have to share this story. Because it's, A, so embarrassing, and B, just, like, hard to believe that that was the catalyst, but it really was.
And did you go out the next day and start saying, well, I'm living as a gay person now. I'm going to go find women to date, and I'm going to, you know, how did that sort of transform your day-to-day life?
Well, I certainly had to start from scratch, because I didn't have any gay friends at the time, only because I was new to LA and I didn't have any friends in general. And so I did think to myself, like, you know, I have this newfound revelation. I mean, I could look back to my entire life and be like, oh, yeah, clearly I've been gay my whole life. But now that I was aware of it, I was like, I gotta make gay friends. I need people to kind of show me the way. And so I like sort of set on this like gay journey to meet people. So I like went on. It's another embarrassing story. I went on Craigslist.
Oh, and where you find nothing but honest dealers there.
Right. But at the time, Craigslist was popular for activity. Like people would post like, oh, we have an ultimate frisbee match, or like join our soccer team. And and at the time it was a like pretty active place, and so I went on there and started joining all these like groups and teams, and in my quest to find gay friends, and it worked actually. I met so many people who I'm still friends with to this day, and they kind of showed me the way.
So where you're from is mm-hmm. Belmont, which is a small town but adjacent to mm-hmm. a bigger town of Charlotte. Do you think if you'd grown up in Charlotte, say, that you would have figured all this out faster?
It's possible. I mean, you know, Belmont is about 25, 30 minutes from Charlotte, but it does feel like it's kind of its own place, especially back then. It was even more isolated. I didn't really know a lot of people that would go to Charlotte to hang out unless they were just flying to, you know, out of the airport. But we just kind of seemed like our own, almost like an island in a way, where we just, things were just a little more simple. And, yeah. You know, I don't even think people locked their doors till I was like 15. And so, yeah, it just, I assumed if I had been in Charlotte, maybe I would have been exposed a little bit more. But still, it was a sign of the times, like on a broader scale. There wasn't a lot of representation out there. Somebody had written to me about my special. They were like, yeah, but like Ellen came out. And I said, you're naming one person. You're telling me your example to me of there being representation is one person who came out and then didn't work for the next 4 years.
Right. I think people forget you that know? Part, that she was sort of shunned for quite a while.
She could not get a job, and she started talking about it again recently. She could not find work for the next 4 years. Her show got canceled. No one wanted to hire her. So, you know, where it seems now like this huge triumphant moment, which it is, she was not in any way rewarded for that. She was, if anything, punished. So, you know, the one example people give me of there being representation is also followed by, you know, being shunned. When you don't see yourself out there in the world and there's nothing you can relate to, that does make a difference.
I want to ask about kind of seeing yourself in the world and kind of how your family sees you and, mm-hmm. and saw you about in the world. So you shot your special here in Charlotte.
Yes.
First of all, who all from your family was there?
My whole family came. My mom, my dad, and his my stepmom, my brother and his wife. My other brother and his wife couldn't make it. but there were a lot of friends from college, a lot of people I grew up with. Half the audience was in my hometown. They were all so super supportive. I had like so many familiar faces in the audience.
The one thing that made me wonder with all those people that you knew there, are there any jokes that you would tell, like maybe on Friday night at the Comedy Store, mm-hmm. that you would not tell when you knew all those people were out there?
Well, I definitely wanted this special to be, it's not clean per se, but it's not like, I'm not like yelling a bunch of cuss words just to say it.
Right. There's blue parts, but it's not like deep, dark blue.
Exactly. That's why I called it sweet and salty, is because for the most part, it's pretty sweet and clean, but every now and then I get a little salty and say some things. But I wanted it to be a special that a lot of people could watch, a lot of people could relate to. So in that regard, I kept it, you know, pretty baseline, where everybody there, even my own family, wouldn't be like cringing. But sometimes when I do shows in the clubs, if I know my mom's there, I'll sort of purposefully, do a little dirtier joke just to, and then I'll be like, oh, and my mom's here. And it makes people really laugh. So for me, it's just a personal giggle than anything. But I try not to get gross or I don't know what you would even call it, blue or dirty, because that's not really my sense of humor. Occasionally I will throw something in because I think it's funny. But for the most part, it's usually on the lighter side.
I wonder, you talk about in the special how your brothers reacted when you told them you were gay, and mm-hmm. how your mom reacted. Your mom is now a big PFLAG member, like president of the local chapter or something,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder how that extended to like aunts and uncles and cousins. I mean, everybody's got somebody in their family who probably wouldn't take something like that well.
Right.
And I wonder how, like, at holidays or family reunions, I mean, did that stuff come up when you first came out, and has it since? Or are there people you have to sort of tiptoe around, or they have to tiptoe around you, they think?
Luckily, in a weird way for me, the one bonus to coming out later in life was that I was already living in L.A. and sort of established my own life. So I wasn't in a town where I felt like, oh, I'm living in a place where I don't know if my, you know, quote unquote lifestyle or who I am is okay. Luckily, I'm from, I think the South gets a bad rap in general as being one thing, or closed minded or so conservative that they are not accepting. But that's not the case for me in my hometown. I mean, everyone in Belmont has been so supportive, so lovely, and I always feel welcomed back home, and that means a lot to me. As far as like my own family, I come from a pretty liberal family, being from the South. My mom has always been, very open-minded, and so I never had any hesitancy or I mean, I was... It was hard having the conversation of I'm gay, because that's just a weird conversation to have.
Right.
But luckily, my immediate family was super supportive, and it's never, ever been an issue. I do have some cousins that are very, very conservative, and, you know, the kind who, like, post on Facebook all day, every day about how much they hate Democrats. I did have one cousin. All the other cousins are lovely and have been very accepting. They have their views. I have my views, but we find common ground and it's all good. But one particular cousin, back when, gay marriage had not passed yet and California was having the Prop 8 votes, where we were voting on the state level about gay marriage, and it failed. And I posted something on Facebook about being, very disappointed, and I'm sure there was some like frustration in that and some anger in that. And, I had a cousin respond on there that my, grandmother, who was deceased, and my, uncle, who's also deceased, would be so ashamed of me for being gay. And that, oof, I'll tell you.
That's a blow.
That's a low blow. Like, I could have somebody say anything else, but, about my, whatever. You want to call me names, whatever. I can take it. I have a thick skin. But my grandmother was, and I were very, very tight. She practically helped raise me. And we always had a very special bond. And for my own family member to say that someone who was so dear to me and I had such a special relationship with, for them to say that they would be ashamed of me was like, nope. There's no going back from that for me. So I have not spoken to that cousin since. And I forgive a lot of things. And I am not one to hold a grudge in life, and I'm always trying to find middle ground with people, but that was definitely a deal breaker.
The story about how you got into show business is so convoluted and so amazing to me that I think in some weird way it might give other people hope when they don't see any way to get there from here.
Yeah.
Could you sort of tell, hearing it sort of starts with this graduation speech you gave in college, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of college shows, and at the end of my sets, I always try to talk a little bit about my journey, because I think it's important for young people to hear that you don't have to be born into a rich family or a connected family or go to the, Ivy League school. That's the beauty of America. You can work your way up the ladder. And I, growing up, in such a small town in the South, would have never thought in a million years that I could, A, live in Los Angeles and be happy there, or B, become a comedian and be on television. That just seemed impossible. But I just, some series of things in my life lined up to give me that opportunity. And I had always kind of been, probably because I didn't know I was gay, I threw all of my attention into school, into overachieving, to being on all the sports teams, to making good grades, to being student body president.
It's so funny you say that, because when I looked at your resume, so to speak, I was thinking, there's somebody who needed to burn off some energy.
Yeah. Well, I think I was just trying to find validation, acceptance, love, because I wasn't dating. I didn't have a boyfriend, giving me that sort of feeling of being wanted, or, just being the object of someone's affection. So, yeah, I just threw myself into everything at school and graduated summa cum laude, which people seem shocked by. But I'm like, I know I have a thick accent, but, people with Southern accents can be smart.
Damn right.
And so I ended up being the graduation speaker at my small women's college in North Carolina. And we had a commencement speaker who was an actress in LA, who was from Raleigh, North Carolina.
That's Emily Proctor, right?
Emily Proctor, yeah.
Who probably people might have seen on the West Wing or things like that.
CSI Miami.
Right.
Yeah, so she and I, it rained that morning, so we had a long break before waiting for the rain to stop. And she and I just hit it off and, found we had some common ground, and both being Carolinians and close to our grandmothers, and had a really lovely conversation for that time before the speeches. And then I gave my speech, and it went really well, and so she just kind of said, that thing that you hear sometimes, let me know, if I can ever do anything for you. And you're like, great, thank you. You don't think that could ever really be a thing. And to make a very long story short, I had plans for the next year to live in Spain, as just sort of a life experience. And I graduated with no money. I had $50 in my bank account. And so I worked that whole summer, 8 jobs, to earn the money to go. And one of the jobs was babysitting. And her best friend called my school asking for some babysitter suggestions. And they suggested me. She didn't know, make the correlation. And as soon as she called, she's like, "Your voice sounds very familiar." And I was like, she goes, "I just saw your graduation speech." And anyway, I ended up babysitting her. And then through that connection, reconnected with Emily. And she ended up hiring me. She said, "You know, when you get back from Spain, get in touch with me. If I have this job still available, you can come out here and be my assistant." And somehow, I don't know how, for a whole year, she didn't hire anyone. and I sort of just sent like an email at the end of my Spain stay, like, "Hey, wasn't sure if this was still available." And she's like, "Yeah, come on out." So I packed up my little, I moved back home, packed up my little car, and my mom and I drove cross country for me to kind of start this new life.
When we come back, Fortune Feenster talks about how there are so many Southern comedians and why Southerners might just be better at comedy. That and more ahead on Southbound.
Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com.
Hey, y'all. We have just survived Super Tuesday here in North Carolina. But this is not the only time our state will be at the center of the 2020 presidential election. This August, more than 50,000 people will arrive in Charlotte for the Republican National Convention. And if you're looking for in-depth analysis and context about this monumental election year, give a listen to WFAE's newest podcast. It's called Inside Politics, the RNC in Charlotte. And it's hosted by my colleagues, Steve Harrison and Lisa Wharf. I highly recommend it. You can find it at wfae.org/insidepolitics or by searching for Inside Politics, the RNC in Charlotte. Now, let's get back to our conversation with Fortune Feenster. The day of graduation, before you meet Emily Proctor and before you give the speech, what did you think you were going to be, or what did you want to be?
I wasn't sure. I knew that I wanted more, whatever that was. I knew I was from a small town. I knew I went to a small college. And college really, I loved my college, and it was the place where I really started to figure out part of who I was and gained confidence. And I knew from college that I wanted more. And I didn't know how to get that. And I remember very vividly having this conversation with my mom at right around graduation of college, because I had such a great experience. I was so involved, and I was a big fish in a small pond at my college. And I remember saying to my mom, like, "What if this is the best it's ever going to be for me?" I also said, you know, "I'm scared to graduate, because what if this is it? This is the peak." And she, you know, just kind of reminded me that, you know, that, like, to stay in one place is, you know, it's not good. She, I think, used the book Tuck Everlasting, about how everybody else moves on, you know, and you're stuck in a place. And, you know, she just sort of helped me to see that, you know, you had a great experience here, but there will be more good times, and you just have to let life unfold and see where it takes you. And so I think I thought, okay, let's, you know, what's next? Maybe it's getting a master's or going to law school. I assumed it'd be something academic. But I always had this pull towards theater, towards, I'd gone to an improv class and it blew my mind. So I knew, I was like, "Oh, I really like that thing on stage," but I wasn't very good at it. And I had very terrible stage fright in college, so it was not a place that I thrived. But in the back of my head, I think I always hoped that something would come of that world, but I just seemed so far-fetched. And so when Emily, this graduation commencement speaker, saying to me, "Let me know if I can ever do anything for you," that thing in the back of my head that had always been like, what if there's something in theater, stage, or acting, or comedy? What if this is the thing? I just remember it sort of ringing a bell in the back of my head, like, well, maybe this is actually could happen. So I just sort of let life take me where I felt like I was supposed to go.
When you were growing up or in college or whatever, would your friends have considered you like the funny one? You know, like the funniest in your peer group or anything?
In college, for sure, because at that point I had really come out of my shell. Growing up, not so much. I was pretty shy growing up, and I think part of it was because I was always, like I talk about my special, I've always been a big kid, always been chubby, and so I think, you know, when I was really young, that sort of affected my self-esteem, and so I was more of the observer. I would sort of watch what was going on around me, and I didn't realize I was, like, taking in a lot of things that I would eventually later on in life spit out into characters and into comedy, into things. And I had a pivotal self-esteem moment when I was 15, where I had gotten pretty overweight and just sort of reached a point of just feeling really bad about myself. And I finally just sort of made this internal decision that I didn't want to be so fat anymore. So I started eating better, and I started running and just taking a better care of myself. And I ended up losing 50 pounds.
Wow.
At 15. And I think it really just gave me confidence for the first time in my life. And I suddenly was okay with people looking at me. I didn't feel so bad about myself. And so I remember a friend of mine had moved away during that year I lost all that weight, and she came back, and I was doing, like, kind of regurgitating all the skits from SNL and like Mary Catherine Gallagher and the cheerleaders that Will Ferrell would do. And I remember her being like, "Oh my God, you're like a whole new person. You're so funny." And I think that really help sort of start that journey where I was okay with being seen.
So you obviously have a strong Southern accent, and I'm wondering when you got to Hollywood and you started, mm-hmm. you know, trying out for roles and any of that sort of thing, did anybody ever ask you to, like, dial it back?
I just, in the very beginning, I was going in for some meetings, and one of the meetings was, like, voiceover, and the casting agent was like, "Okay, well, now do something other than Southern." I was like, "Ugh, I got nothing for you." And she's like, "Well, do a grandmother." So I did it. She goes, "Okay, but can she not be Southern?" I'm like, "Lady, no. If you, I got all different versions of Southern, but this is what I got." So that meeting ended very quickly. You know, I don't know. It might have taken me longer to get some traction because of it. I was out here for a good 8 years before I got any acting job. But I don't really remember people sort of hanging their hat on the accent or making it a big thing. It just seemed, I think because I am already different, I look different, I have this big curly hair, I'm just like a broad shoulders. I think people are already like, "Well, she's already different," and the accent just sort of is part of that. So I think it's just become part of the package.
Yeah, I do wonder. I mean, obviously you bring a unique, like you said, a unique set of attributes to whatever role you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I do kind of find myself looking at the actors who have strong Southern accents mm-hmm. in roles, and I think of, like, the guy who played Kenneth in 30 Rock and, yeah. you know, Danny McBride and people like that. And they all seem to be these sort of, like, wacky, you know, kind of semi, maybe a little insane.
Like over the top.
Over the top. And I do wonder whether people who are casting those roles think, like, they couple those things together.
Maybe. I mean, but I think, too, like, a lot of Southerners aren't afraid to sort of be that way and laugh at themselves. A lot of Southerners that I know
don't take themselves too seriously. That's sort of Danny McBride's whole thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're like in on, you know, we're a lot of people don't realize that we're not being laughed at. We're like part of the, we're in on it. So, you know, maybe it's us just sort of like taking our own power back of like, no, we're not the buffoon. You're not laughing at us. We're in on this too, guys. You know, so I think that we're just, you know, pretty fearless in that way. But, you know, occasionally you get some, well, then you got the like Holly Hunters. There's, I think she's Texas maybe.
That's
but,
true. Yeah.
You know, who've really honed in on that dramatic thing. But I think Southerners in general make good comedians because they're good storytellers.
And so now you're in this reboot of The L Word.
Yeah. Very, very briefly.
Very briefly.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you play in there?
I play Alice is one of the main characters, and she was in the original series. I play her warm-up comedian, who also happens to be her third cousin. And we sort of had this whole arc when they first asked me to do a few episodes where, you know, I've just moved to L.A. from the South, and she's sort of helping me find my way. And I think at the beginning of the series, they thought that they would be able to sort of explore this character a little bit, but once they got into the thick of the show, realizing that they had to really service the characters coming back from the original series and then also service these four brand new main characters, there just was no time. So I just ended up being more of a cameo than anything of just like, hey, you know, welcome to Alice's show. But I was such a fan of the original series. As far as like finally we have some representation, that for me it was just a treat to like get to be on set and, you know, just sort of reminisce about what that show meant for people.
And it sounds like maybe you were on there long enough to have any love scenes.
No. Listen, I offered to do full frontal and they go, no, thank you.
Is that
oh, my God. Talk about that would mortify my mom.
Well, is that something, I mean, do you think about yourself as the kind of person who might take on, not necessarily just a nudity, but a more dramatic role, something that's, you know, has different shades than what you've been doing in comedy?
I would definitely do, I mean, yeah, no love scenes for me, but I would definitely, I definitely want to do something on the dramatic side because that, I think comedians are able to sort of shift to that a little bit easier than people realize because, you know, a lot of people's comedy is sort of based on a painful experience, an embarrassing experience, and finding the funny in it. So at the root of comedy is going through something. And I think comedians are able to emote that pretty well. I do
see you as like the eventual revealed as the killer in like a Law and Order yes. episode or something.
Oh, that's my dream. I want to be in like a horror movie too, or something where it's just like I'm the crazy person that's like been terrorizing people.
And everybody laughs at you and laughs at your jokes yeah. until then, right?
Exactly. No, I would really love to get to do stuff like that. I got to do a very tiny bit on Tales of the City. It was the reboot of that series from a long time ago. They did it for Netflix last summer. And I did a monologue that was kind of more serious. And it was nice just to like sit down and you know, get to show some emotion and just kind of show a different side of myself.
Yeah. Now, I read that you have a house back in Belmont, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how often do you get back?
Maybe four times a year. My mom lives there, so, you know, it's she's, like, taking over the place. so I go back because I like to go home and visit my family, but also I have to make sure that she's not destroyed the house.
So when you go back home, are there touchstones for you? Are there, like, things you have to, places you have to go, things you have to do, that sort of thing?
Oh, 100%. It usually involves food. There's always, like, all right, well, we got to go to this place and this place. I mean, always a classic for me are two places. I always love to go to Barbecue King.
Oh, yes.
In Charlotte. That's a staple for me and has been since I was little. Always, and then I always love Bojangles because I don't get, we don't have Bojangles, obviously, out here.
There's so many, Bojangles, by the way, for those of you who are not from the South, is a chicken place, mm-hmm. a chain that's beloved in the South. And I remember reading some piece on Zach Galifianakis one time where he's driving somebody around his land in North Carolina, and there's Bojangles wrappers rolling around the back seat. So.
Yeah, it's a place that if you were from that area, you like everyone loves it. But yeah, I always am like, I always want to go to my favorite restaurants when I'm home. You know, it's that good Southern cooking, a lot of fried food.
Of course.
And, you know, I just like going home because we have a porch and rocking chairs and I can just sit out there and just like have some peace, you know, for a minute. I'll walk my dogs around the neighborhood and, you know, it just feels like I don't have to, everything's not so fast paced. It's like, oh, you can slow down for a minute.
Sometimes it's amazing what we don't know about ourselves. Fortune Feimster didn't know she was gay until a Lifetime movie turned on the light bulb. But she also didn't know she was a natural-born entertainer until a whole series of circumstances landed her in Los Angeles. Most people who have success in life, personally or professionally, work hard for it. But dig deep into any successful life, and you're also bound to find some lucky breaks. What you do with those breaks is a measure of talent and dedication. But many of us should take a moment to appreciate our, I apologize for this in advance, good fortune. Southbound is a production of WFAE in Charlotte. Our audience engagement producer is Joni Deutsch. Our main theme music comes from Josh Turner. You can listen to this and other episodes of Southbound on the NPR One app, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find Southbound on WFAE.org, where each episode has show notes with more information on that week's guest. See y'all next time. Thanks for listening.
Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com. Additional support is provided by the Knight Foundation.
I'm Mike Collins, host of WFAE's Charlotte Talks. Before she was a worldwide best-selling author, Kathy Reichs taught forensic anthropology at UNC Charlotte long before our fascination with true crime began. Her tremendously successful thrillers inspired the long-running TV show Bones and featured her alter ego, Temperance Brennan. Join me and Kathy Reichs for a special conversation live from 7th Street Public Market in Uptown Charlotte, Thursday, March 12th at 9. Details at WFAE.org.